Welcome to the Sufi Reverberations podcast, where each week, God willing, you will be able to hear a poem, a story, a meditation, and a musical interlude that give expression to one Sufi's perspective concerning the mystical dimension of Islam. My name is Anab Whitehouse, and I will be your host. Although I am not a sheikh, nonetheless, I did have the opportunity to spend 16 years in the company of a Sufi saint of the 20th century, and by the grace of God, was able to gain a few insights into the nature of the Sufi mystical path through that association. So, without further delay, let's proceed to the essential contents of this episode. The following poem is from the Mathnawi of Maulana Jalaluddin Muhammad Rumi, as translated by Rafiq Abdullah, and which appears in his book, The Words of Paradise. We speak of God who is hidden, describing the indescribable. You philosophize, I only criticize. Another refutes us both. Yet another, there are always others, will pontificate and vilify and pin truth down like a dead butterfly. Everyone prognosticates and assassinates with a knowing word, a nod, a distance-seeking look. Each insinuates, even to himself, that he knows. All these busy, mouthing truths cannot speak the hidden truth. Yet each carries in itself an antidote for its being, as blindness contains insight, as a fleeting moment unveils eternity. Be patient with your counterfeit truths. Like false coins to the real is their value to be measured. So like God's word in the book, we learn to discriminate. All is not true, nor all entirely false. As a small dose of poison a potent medicine makes, so our partial errors, our thirst for impartial good, do slake. This week's episode of the short story is titled Blind Man's Buff. Knowing that direct experience often tends to be a far better teacher than mere discussion or book learning, a spiritual guide selected four of his students for a field trip. He had arranged to pick each of them up at his or her home. As soon as one of these individuals got in the teacher's vehicle, he followed the same procedure. The guide handed the person an air-filtering mask with elastic band, several earplugs, and finally a cloth blindfold, indicating that the three items should be donned when instructed to do so. When all four students had been prepped for their excursion in the foregoing way, the teacher began to outline the nature of the exercise. At an appropriate time, each student would be taken to an object of some kind, and the student's task was to identify whatever mystery entity might be presented to that person. The air filter, augmented by recent technological breakthroughs, was intended to eliminate, for the most part, any sense of smell. The earplugs, which were industrial strength, took care of any sounds that might assist the person to identify an object. The blindfold, although neither enhanced by modern science nor of industrial strength, was an effective means for keeping vision in the dark. Only the sense of touch was left unencumbered. The teacher assured each of the students that nothing associated with the task placed them at risk, and in addition, he would be by the student's side throughout the exercise to help the students navigate through unknown surroundings. Moreover, the teacher indicated that a person should reserve any judgment she or he might have concerning the identity of an object until they all returned to the teacher's residence for a debriefing period with respect to the field trip. Finally, since each individual was to be taken alone to an area where something to be identified was located, the teacher asked the students not to try to speak to one another while waiting in the vehicle for the guide and a given student to return from an object identification run. Because they were going to place plugs in their ears in the near future, and since when that occurred, talking with one another would be pretty difficult, if not impossible, the teacher wanted to make certain everyone understood the ground rules and not be tempted to swap information about their respective experiences. The group drove for about 20 minutes before the time for the first stop was beginning to approach. When they were about 15 minutes away from the initial destination, the teacher told the students to get ready to put their equipment on. But before they did, he explained to them that when the vehicle finally stopped, he would tap the person who was to come with him on the right shoulder, help that student out of the car, and the others were to just stay put until the two returned. Eventually, the vehicle stopped. The teacher tapped the first person on the shoulder, and per instructions, he helped this person out of the vehicle, locking things up before the two went on their way. The teacher and the student walked for a few minutes, but were slowed somewhat by the caution and anxiety which accompanied the student's loss of senses. Since the way to wherever they were going was punctuated with a number of turns to the left and the right, the student was pretty disoriented by the time the two arrived at the site of the object to be identified. The teacher guided the student to the target object, placing the student's hands on the item. The blindfolded individual began to feel about, searching for clues through which to identify the mystery. The student could feel lots of metal as well as hard rubber. The shape of the rubber portions were round, while the metal shapes varied in form, although there seemed to be some overall pattern to the way the metal shapes repeated themselves. Several bar-like pieces rose from the metal attached to the rubber aspects of the object, as if the bar-like features were connected to something else. However, if the bar-like portions were part of some bigger entity, the student couldn't tell because he was not tall enough to reach the end of wherever the bar-like pieces were heading, assuming, of course, they went anywhere. The student was pretty sure the round rubber portions were tires of some kind, but due to the way this part of the object was configured, there appeared to be a number of the round rubber portions which were linked together. The arrangement seemed somewhat like some of the big tractor trailers he had seen, and yet different. After a number of minutes had passed, the teacher gently grabbed the student by the elbow and led him away from the object and returned to the vehicle. The teacher helped the student back in, got in himself, and drove away. They traveled for another 20 minutes and stopped for the second leg of the field trip. Once again, the spiritual guide tapped one of the students on the right shoulder and proceeded to disembark with the student in tow, locking the vehicle as he did this. Following a further 5 minutes or so of walking this way and that, the two arrived at the pre-selected destination. The teacher led the student to a set of stairs and leaned down to help the student place his right foot on the right step. Proceeding slowly, the two walked up a series of stairs. There were maybe 18 steps in all, and the angle of ascent was steep but relatively manageable, although the stairs seemed to shake somewhat as they went from one level to the next. At the top of the stairs was a flat area, and this seemed either connected to or close to another surface that had a slope or slant to it. After the student had been helped to step onto the second, somewhat sloped surface, he was touched by his teacher in a way which suggested that the student had arrived at his object and should begin to explore the object in question. The student walked along with her hands in front of her, trying to find parts of the object, but there was nothing there. Every so often, the teacher would gently take her by the shoulders, as if he were in back of her, and induce her to move in another direction. On some of these occasions, it seemed to the student that the surface on which she was walking was beginning to slope downward more. This pattern of exploration went on for a few minutes. A thought occurred to the student that whatever the object to be identified might be, the surface on which she was walking was a primary component of that object. As a result, she kneeled down and began crawling along the surface, feeling ahead of her as she went along. It seemed to have the coolness of a metallic-like surface, but in addition, the metal felt as if it had a coat of polished or varnished paint on it. She also noticed that in places, the surface on which she was crawling seemed to have more give to it than in other areas, as if some portions of the metallic painted surface were suspended somehow. Along one boundary area of the surface on which she was sometimes crawling and sometimes walking, the surface beneath her seemed to meet up with another metal surface that sloped up and away from the portion with which she had been largely preoccupied. At this point, the teacher gently took her by the elbow, turned her around, and guided her back to the place with the steps. They carefully descended and walked back to the vehicle, getting ready to travel again. This time, they drove for about 10 minutes, although naturally it was very hard for any of the students to really know how long they had been riding along before they stopped again. Once more, the teacher selected one of the students, locked the vehicle after getting both of them out of their means of transportation, and proceeded to take that individual to the object in waiting. While in transit to their destination, they walked along a surface which sloped slightly downwards before sloping upward again. This part of the walk seemed to be on a surface that vibrated a little with each step that the two took, as if it were a temporary structure of some kind. Eventually, they came to a passageway, door, or narrow opening. The student was uncertain which, if any, of these possibilities might be the case. The student suspected one of the three ideas which occurred to him about this facet of his experience might be correct because they seemed to have to go in a single file. Moreover, when this happened, he brushed against something on both sides of him as he went through whatever it was. His teacher guided him to the right as they got through the relatively tight space. After taking a few steps, the teacher stopped the student and then placed the student's hands in front of him, encouraging the student to explore whatever was there. Initially, the student felt a fabric of some sort. The top of the object was at or about his lower chest level. He followed the fabric down 2 or 3 feet, whereupon it reached an area that proceeded out at right angles for a couple of feet before sloping downward. This lower portion seemed to work its way back into the object, and beneath this part was an empty space, and then the floor, which seemed to be carpeted. On either side of the area of the object which was at right angles to the upright portion he first had been exploring, there were several padded areas that also were at right angles to the upright portion. The student's impression suggested the object was some kind of fancy seat or easy chair. He had a sense there might be other similar seats or chairs in the immediate area, for when he had been examining the object to which he had been directed, he briefly leaned up against other objects which appeared to be very much like the one he was examining. Fleeting thoughts of a theater of some kind, or maybe a lounge area, passed through his head. The guide signaled to the student via the latter's elbow that the assignment was over, and the two worked their way back to the vehicle. Soon, the occupants of the vehicle were on the road again. They traveled a further 15 minutes before coming to a rest. The final student was tapped on the shoulder. After disembarking from the vehicle and locking it, the two headed towards the designated object of mystery. When they got to the desired location, the teacher placed the student's hands on the object. Immediately, she began exploring the object. However, as she did this, she noticed the teacher was hanging on to her, as if to make sure she didn't get into trouble by going in the wrong direction. For the most part, the teacher encouraged her to stay in one place. She began feeling around with her hands. The surface was metallic and seemed to slope upwards on two sides. It felt warm, as if either the sun had been shining on it, or as if it were connected in some way to machinery or an engine. Moreover, she felt like there was a vibration being radiated through the object she was touching. The woman was permitted to feel about a little more, and then she was stopped by the teacher. They returned to the vehicle, got in, and they drove back towards their spiritual guide's house. When they arrived at their teacher's residence, the teacher removed their earplugs and instructed them to take off their blindfolds and the air filter masks. Following this doffing of gear, they got out of the vehicle and went into the house. Earlier, the teacher had prepared some refreshments for this occasion. After the students were seated, he brought out the treats, placing them within easy reach of the four, and took a seat nearby. The students helped themselves to whatever they liked. When everyone was comfortable and settled, the teacher asked each of the students about his or her experiences and what each thought about the identity of the objects to which she or he had been brought. The accounts followed the order in which students had been selected during the field excursion. Once the students had finished their descriptions and given their impressions and guesses concerning the identity of the objects to which they had been led, the teacher nodded his head in appreciation of all that they had experienced and discussed. He looked at each of the students and smiled somewhat mischievously. He said, "I'm afraid I have played a bit of a trick on all of you. In truth, you all were exploring different aspects of the same object. All the driving around was just a diversion. I merely took different routes away from and back to the same parking lot we stopped at the very first time. Moreover, the other precautions that I took were, in part, to protect the nature of the diversion. Furthermore, in part, the precautionary steps were thrown in to help you become disoriented with respect to what was going on. However, I also tried to set things up so that you would be forced to engage experiences in non-usual modes. The methodology I used hopefully helped induce each of you to approach things in a way that you might not ordinarily do, and therefore possibly help you to start reflecting on your experiences in a non-habitual manner." Having confessed to the deception, their spiritual guide asks, "So, you now all have heard the experiences which each of you have had. What do you think the object was?" The students all proffered a few guesses. The teacher smiled throughout the process. At various points, the students broke into heated debates about the nature of the object, using the collective evidence that had been gathered to support or refute various opinions. When the students' suggestions and discussions came to an end, they looked to him with eager anticipation to see if any of them had been correct. He began by indicating, "None of you were completely right, although some were nearer the mark than were others. In point of fact, the object in question was a commercial airline. I had made arrangements with an air executive friend of mine to be able to conduct this experiment. If each of you thinks back, I believe you will be able to deduce which parts of the plane you were led into for exploration. However, the identity of the object is not the most important facet of the whole affair." He surveyed the faces of his students and inquired, "So what's the principle at work here?" The students were absorbed in contemplation in relation to their teacher's question. After some time, one of the more perceptive students said, "Just as all of our understandings of the one object, in this case a commercial jet, were shaped by our individual experiences of that plane, so too all of our understandings of God are shaped by our individual experiences with, through, and by divinity." The teacher shook his head in the affirmative and said, "Yes, this is right. But I'm going to toss your answer back at you with a bit of a curve on it." Looking briefly at each student in turn before speaking, he finally said, "What if I were to tell you that all through this experiment, each of you were in a state of self-hypnosis, and the events you thought you were experiencing never actually happened in quite the way you allowed yourselves to believe?" The students looked at one another with puzzled, mystified expressions. And then they looked at their teacher, trying to fathom his words. The one thing which did not surprise them was the fact that just when they thought they had figured something out, the teacher had a tendency to wrap a lesson in further questions, as if no matter how deeply one probed or understood things, there was some dimension of reality which was hidden beneath the surface of appearances, even apparent understanding. One of the four students said, So is your question just a hypothetical, or are you asking us to consider the possibility that most of us tend to live in a state of hypnotic trance, which is self-induced? Well, the teacher responded, have you not heard it said on good authority that existence is maintained through illusion? Or alternatively, have you not heard it said that we live in a state of dream and when we die we wake up? Aren't these kinds of observation resonant with the question which has been placed before you? After a short silence, one of the students, attempting to summarize things in her own mind, asks, if to a degree I sort of understand what you may be trying to get us to think about, you not only seem to be saying, on the basis of the field experiment we did today, that everybody parses the presence of divinity according to one's own way of interpreting and structuring experience, but you also seem to be saying that above and beyond the manner in which reality is differentially interpreted by us, there is a substantial component of delusional and illusory thinking that makes up the fabric through which we weave our tapestry of life. Is this way of putting things more or less correct? Sensing that the student had not yet finished, the teacher responded with a non-committal, and the student stammered, tailing off, trying to figure out how to recapture what she had been intuiting just a moment before. Finally, after a brief pause, she added with a touch of exasperation, and I guess I'm wondering if it is ever possible to know what the truth is. Well, the teacher replied, to use your words, it is possible to more or less have a correct understanding of things. But the secret is in knowing which is more and which is less, as well as to learn how to go about increasing the former while diminishing the latter. Moreover, a very important part of this secret is to come to terms with how we are responsible for maintaining existence through illusion, along with keeping ourselves in a state of sleep, because until we come to understand our own role in these processes, then to paraphrase someone, we begin at no beginning and we work towards no end. Finally, just as you all went through this experience minus some of your sensory modalities, and as a result your ability to understand what was taking place was seriously affected, so too in everyday life, even though we may enjoy the use of our physical senses and minds, most of us operate without the use of other spiritual modalities of understanding which are being veiled, and this affects our judgment. Today's edition of Musical Interludes is called Spring Air. From the deepest recesses of the Orono Bog Walk in Orono, Maine, you are listening to the Sufi Reverberations Podcast. The following meditative essay is entitled, Fatiha. There is a great need by those who decide to undertake the Sufi journey for the blessings of spiritual association. One of the ways in which the opportunity for such association is provided is through the sessions of gathering often referred to as Fatiha. Normally, these gatherings take place at least once a week. From time to time, there may be more than one session during any given week. Thursday, sometime after sunset, is a common period for these sessions. However, depending on circumstances, other days may be selected as well. On the surface, the Fatiha appears fairly simple and straightforward. The person, usually but not always the sheikh, recites some chapters of divine revelation. Blessings are sought for certain spiritual personalities from the past who are of significance to the Sufi order under whose authority the Fatiha is being conducted. Petitionary prayers are offered seeking spiritual benefit for both those participating in the Fatiha as well as for all humanity. Sometimes in certain orders, sacred music and songs are listened to after the completion of the recitation of the Fatiha. Sometimes in certain orders, sacred turning is performed following the Fatiha. Almost invariably, there will be time set aside during the session for some amount of chanting or remembrance of God. These remembrances may take on a wide variety of forms from order to order and from sheikh to sheikh. In addition, there often also are talks or questions and answer periods at some point during the Fatiha gatherings. Furthermore, sometimes the sheikh will talk privately with different initiates. Fatiha, however, is more than just the simple acts of recitation, prayers, chanting, music, turning, and discussion. There are deeper structural complexities to the gathering. These complexities are due to the fact that there are many levels on which the Fatiha takes place, of which the spatial-temporal coordinates of the session is but one aspect. Depending on what level one engages and or is engaged by during the Fatiha session, very, very different kinds of process are observed to transpire. At the heart of this level of engagement issue is the dimension of spiritual association between a Fatiha participant in her or his sheikh. As a result of such spiritual association, a Fatiha session has the potential for affecting, God willing, every aspect of the human being. Body, ego, mind, emotions, heart, spirit, and other dimensions of the individual may all be affected to varying degrees by what transpires during Fatiha as a result of spiritual association between sheikh and devotee. Spiritual association is the prism through which the lights of recitation, prayers, chanting, and so on are cast upon and affect, God willing, the properly receptive devotee. Spiritual association is the lens which focuses the blessings of the gathering on different individuals in different ways according to the efforts and struggles which are taking place. More specifically, the body, ego, emotions, and mind must all be trained. The body must be cleansed as well as accept some degree of constraints on its movements and its appetites. The ego must be quieted. The emotions must be brought into proper balance. The mind must learn to stop wandering and concentrate on the tasks at hand. In addition, the heart must be turned away from the influences of the body, ego, emotions, and mind. The spiritual qualities of the heart must be permitted to manifest themselves, and this only can occur, God willing, after the heart has been purified and polished. The spirit is the locus of the manifestation of true spiritual love. However, this love will not be manifested in its full beauty until the spirit has been perfected. The Fatiha gatherings can be a powerful source of assistance and support in all of the foregoing. This spiritual help is an expression of what is meant in part by the blessings which come from spiritual association. The manner in which one approaches Fatiha even before the session begins is also very important. For example, one must have a clear spiritual purpose in attending Fadaha. Fadaha is not a social club. Fadaha is not about fashion, status, or prestige. Fadaha is not a career move. Fadaha is not a leisure time activity. Fadaha is an opportunity to seek God and to be brought closer to the realization of the secret of one's essential nature. Fadaha is a chance to turn away from the world and the ego. Fadaha is a means of throwing overboard all the jetsam of one's existence. Fadaha is a doorway to the deepening, strengthening, and enrichment of faith. Fadaha is a passageway to repentance, humility, patience, gratitude, sincerity, and dependence on God. Fadaha is a medium for healing, God willing, all our spiritual diseases. One does not go to Fadaha looking for mystical experiences. One does not go to Fadaha preoccupied with thoughts of acquiring lofty spiritual states or miraculous powers. One goes to Fadaha to struggle with and undermine one's desires and entanglements. One goes to Fadaha to learn about submitting to God's will. The mere physical presence of someone in a Fadaha gathering does not necessarily guarantee that individual will receive the blessings of spiritual association. If one does not attend Fadaha with a clear spiritual purpose in mind, one potentially will be depriving oneself of the blessings of spiritual association in direct proportion to the cloudiness and darkness of one's purpose. Not only should one have a clear spiritual purpose, one also ought to have a pure intention. Everything one does should be done out of a desire to please God as an end in itself. One does not seek to please God in order to get something. God is not a means to an end. One struggles and sacrifices because one loves God. A love which is dependent on getting something beyond love is not love. Many of the benefits which the Fadaha gatherings make possible, God willing, involve lessons of spiritual etiquette. There is an etiquette appropriate to every circumstance and relationship. Spiritual association takes one by the hand and teaches one about these etiquettes. To begin with, there is an etiquette appropriate to one's relationship with God. One needs to learn to become a servant of God in order for this etiquette to be manifested. There is an etiquette appropriate to the prophets and saints who constitute the foundation on which Fadaha rests. Part of this etiquette is incorporated in the portion of the Fadaha proceedings dedicated to remembrance and commemoration of, as well as a seeking of blessings for, one's spiritual progenitors. There is an etiquette appropriate to one's relationship with one's spiritual guide. This is so irrespective of whether one's guide is physically present at the Fadaha or not. In fact, an understanding and appreciation of the different varieties of etiquette is acquired primarily through one's spiritual association with one's guide. There is an etiquette appropriate to the other people who attend the Fadaha gatherings. There is an etiquette appropriate to the people one meets after leaving Fadaha. For if the lessons of Fadaha are left in the room where the gathering takes place, one might as well not go to Fadaha. There is even an etiquette appropriate to one's essential self. This etiquette will not be properly observed until one learns to sacrifice the false self on behalf of the true self. Fadaha is not said just for the benefit of those who attend the gathering. It is said on behalf of all of humanity and creation. Moreover, it is offered on behalf of those souls which have passed on from this world. It is said for the sick and the lonely, for the homeless and the hungry. Fadaha is said for the hearts which have been broken and the lives that have been abused. Fadaha is said for the families of the participants, as well as for both the local community and the communities of the world. Fadaha is intended to be a spiritual fountain which will flow into the lives of people outside of the Fadaha. Fadaha is intended to be a radiating beacon of blessings to be shared by everyone independently of considerations of merit. Through the blessings of spiritual association which, God willing, come through the gathering of Fadaha, one learns how to pray for others. One learns how to support, encourage, and assist others. One learns how to love and serve others. Fatiha is an occasion to recite the names and attributes of God. Fatiha provides an opportunity to reflect on and contemplate the wonders of God's creation. Fatiha provides much material on which to work after one leaves the Fatiha gathering. At the same time, the blessings of spiritual association, which, God willing, are conferred during Fatiha, provide one with the strength, courage, and perseverance to struggle with the homework material generated during Fatiha and therefore not waste the time between Fatihas. Association is not just a matter of physical proximity. Association is, in essence, a matter of spiritual intimacy. According to the masters of the Sufi path, God has established spiritual association as one of the primary ways through which blessings concerning the realization of the purpose of life, true identity, and essential capacity are to be conferred. Spiritual association is a bridge created by God which enables the individual to travel from illusion to truth and from the false self to the truth self. Fatiha is a vehicle on the bridge of spiritual association. The blessings of spiritual association come in many very subtle forms. One cannot see the mode of transmission. Moreover, one even may not be aware of the transforming effect which such spiritual association is having. One may go to Fatiha gatherings week after week and feel one is receiving no benefit. However, if one is sincere in one's efforts, then God willing, there shall come a time when one will notice determinate changes coming in to one's life. These changes alter the character of one's opinions, attitudes, interests, understandings, behaviors, priorities, and commitments. The nature of these transformations increasingly will come to reflect the spiritual qualities of the guide with whom God has brought one into contact for the purposes of receiving the blessings of association. If one does not give up on Fatiha, then God willing, Fatiha will not give up on the individual. In time, the blessings of spiritual association with the teacher will manifest themselves, if God wishes, through, among other things, the countless benefits of the Fatiha gatherings. You have been listening to the Sufi Reverberations podcast. I hope you will join me next week for a new episode of this program. May peace be your companion.